Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson on this beautiful, sunny Sunday morning in downtown Chicago. And, you know, Dave, I heard your weather forecast, but I have to tell you, I'm looking at what Mike Hamernick has just posted after I was out on the WGN Storm Center patio, and Mike Hamernick has a high of 79 listed for today.
Well, we'll investigate that. I tell you what.
Now,
let's just jump ahead and take 50, Mike's word for it.
50s near the lake, but a high of 79 today and 80 tomorrow.
Let's go with Mike.
60s near the lake.
Let's go with Mike's forecast.
Yeah, then. No. I just want to give you an update here because
I'm glad you did.
That sounds tremendous.
And, it certainly does.
I think I need to have young Mr. Panayotovich come over, and hopefully he can show some of the talent that his father has on the grill and bring him over to the party patio for grilling today.
It's a very good idea.
How did he get you to say that he's got grill talent? That's what I want to know.
Okay, so what, he just hired it then all those years? You're gonna rat out the old man here
fair
on the radio
point, fair point.
Well, yeah, no, a beautiful couple of days ahead, according to our friends over at WGN Weather Center, 60s through the rest of the week starting on Tuesday, but then back into the 70s for next weekend. So
yeah, that's exactly right. Day like today for next Saturday.
We're starting to get into that nice schedule where we get the weather on the weekends the way it's supposed to be.
That's right.
But nevertheless, it's still hockey weather here in Chicago.
It'll be 32 in 2 weeks. We all know it. We'll be shoveling again.
I've seen snow in May here.
I think, Dave, you might be able to put away the newsroom Zamboni. It might be time.
Oh, I finally got it started.
Yeah, figures. Yeah, yeah. Doesn't it?
I finally got it started.
No, you lost the key last week.
It's not a pole start?
No, it's a key.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, gosh. Well, get out there. Enjoy this beautiful weekend weather. It's just gorgeous out there today. Joining me now is my good friend and Tribune colleague, Jeff Cohen, investigative reporter at the Chicago Tribune. And Jeff really has done yeoman's work the last couple of days on a variety of stories. And obviously, one I want to get to off the top is the issue of the Chicago Police Department and the independent task force that reviewed what was going on in the police department, kind of an effort, I think, to try to jump ahead of whatever the U.S. Department of Justice does in its investigation of the police department. Jeff, welcome to the show.
How you doing, Rick?
I'm doing very well, thank you. This, you know, in some respects, when you look back at what Mayor Emanuel has said following the release of this full report, that in his words, like, well, this isn't necessarily telling us stuff we didn't already know.
Yeah, I would say that's true, although I don't think that he has not really made in-depth public comments yet about the material that's in this report. But I think that, you know, part of what was interesting to, you know, political observers in town is that initially, this task force was sort of criticized, and I'm sure you remember it was even protested by some of the protesters that have been all over town in the wake of the Laquan McDonald shooting. But, you know, there was some concern that it was, first of all, it was the mayor's task force. There were questions about Lori Lightfoot, who was put in place to head it. You know, she was general counsel at OPS, which is the agency that preceded IPRA. So there were questions and concerns about just how independent it might be. Hiram Grau was on the task force. He's a former CPD leader. So people were sort of expecting that this might just be, you know, sort of a puppet exercise. But what we saw was this task force, you know, really did take a quality swing at what's going on at CPD. And it's kind of left the mayor in a bit of a spot between dealing with his police department and this task force that has now, you know, really been critical.
Yeah, I mean, as you pointed out with the idea of the protest, that this was going to be, you know, kind of viewed as whitewashing the department and that kind of thing, where it really was a big swing. You know, when you come out and basically, as a task force, say that the police department must acknowledge a history of racism and overhaul the way it handles excessive force allegations, and the whole idea of a lack of trust, which is something that people have talked about, but now you have it kind of formalized in this document.
Yeah, well, it really was. And I mean, if you remember when the mayor announced the task force, he said that one of the jobs would be to, you know, take a look at it, see if there are any recommendations that could be made to improve the way they do investigations. And the task force came back and basically said, yeah, blow it up. I mean, that was their recommendations, to get rid of it and replace it. And you're right, they really criticized the department for having systemic racism. And I think that they were really struck by some of the community forums that they held. They had four of those where they heard from people in the community who, you know, I think it went beyond just complaints about police tactics to really feeling completely disrespected. And the task force turned that into, you know, in their report saying that they felt that the police were really criminalizing entire neighborhoods, where almost every interaction with people in these neighborhoods, you know, not to put a complete blanket on there, because obviously there are, I'm sure, police officers who do well, but by and large, people are complaining that, pardon me, even the most upstanding members of their community were being approached as if they must be doing something wrong on the street, and every single traffic stop and whatever else was coming from the view of, well, there must be something else major going on because I have a person of color here that I'm dealing with. And so I think the task force really wanted to chop away at that completely, have CPD kind of hit the reset button, have the superintendent kind of go around on an apology tour, have everybody acknowledge that there's a systemic problem, and kind of rebuild it from there. You know, build up community trust. One of the things they called for is having caps replaced also by something at the district level, where commanders actually work with what they called community stakeholders, you know, leaders in these communities, and kind of have a working relationship where, coming in the door, CPD isn't treating everybody like, you know, a criminal in waiting.
We're speaking with Jeff Cohen, investigative reporter for the Chicago Tribune. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
312-981-7200 is our phone number. This is the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, and joining me on the phone is my friend and Tribune colleague, Jeff Cohen. He's an investigative reporter at the Tribune. We're talking about the task force that was formed after the Laquan McDonald shooting video controversy, and Jeff's look into what this task force had reported. And Jeff, one thing I thought was interesting was the idea of just abolishing the Independent Police Review Authority, which is something that, for the most part, the mayor has stood behind.
Yeah, he had stood behind it, at least up until relatively recently, when he asked for the resignation of the head of it. But, yeah, even in announcing this task force, he made it sound like it was something that could be reformed or changed or do its job better. We're not sure how surprised he was by the recommendation that it go away and be replaced by something that's a little bit more community-based. But it's something he's going to have to deal with now. And some of these changes that the task force is recommending would actually take some changes in state law, you know, related to collective bargaining with the police department. But they really do want a complete redo and a lot more transparency and things that, you know, we all sometimes get some pushback from the mayor's office. So we'll see how it goes.
And that was another thing, too, is it never entered my mind that the collective bargaining agreement with the police was part of what the task force basically said was institutionalizing a code of silence.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting as well. And if you think about it, if you were to handle, you know, say a criminal investigation, not to, you know, criminalize the police department, but if you were to do that, you wouldn't let witnesses take 24 hours to get their story straight. You wouldn't necessarily let witnesses talk to each other. You wouldn't confront a witness with video evidence and then expect or allow them to change their testimony or change their story. But that's essentially what's built into the collective bargaining with the police department. And the task force came back and said this is overly protective. In addition to all those things, if you're trying to make a complaint, you can't really do so anonymously, or at least when it comes down to having somebody actually investigate it, you have to have a written affidavit. So you have to have people take this extra sworn step. And the task force point, I think, was that you need to be able to have the main goal be to investigate police behavior. And sometimes that might take an anonymous complaint. I mean, think of all the anonymous complaints that we've dealt with in the news business that have turned into who knows what. But to have that built into the collective bargaining process and have that built into the contracts, they really saw that as you said, sort of codifying the, at least the ability to maintain a code of silence. And you can't, you really can't run it that way if you want independence and you want to get the result you're looking for all the time.
Speaking about the collective bargaining agreement and the police union, we've got a call from Ron. Ron, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Yes, good morning, Rick, and to your guests. I think what's more alarming, even than what came out of the report, was the response from Mr. Angelo from the FOP. If you're going to deny all of these, you know, allegations, then how are you going to get any kind of reform? And my second question is, how can there be any credibility with the new, I guess, interim superintendent when he has come from the same police department where these things have taken place? And I think he gave a statement like he has never seen it or heard it. So what credibility does he have? So thanks, Rick.
Thank you, Ron. Jeff?
Yeah, thanks for the call. I think that you do set up some interesting questions there, and I do think the FOP response was telling as well, at least in the way that there's some pushback there. Obviously, you know, they have their own interests to protect. I thought it was interesting, too, that in part of the response was them pointing out that this could be another morale hit for the department as well. You know, that's what I was mentioning earlier. The mayor's already dealing with a spike in homicides, and you know, the crime rate has gone up, and the FOP is suggesting this could be another blow to that. But it remains to be seen, I think. The new superintendent, Eddie Johnson, he hasn't said too much on this report. I mean, if people were paying attention last week, you saw him questioned initially, and he said, well, you know, essentially I need to review this, and he's open to at least some of the changes. He's talked about being open to more oversight, at least. What that looks like, you know, we'll see. But again, it's sort of early in the process here. We're not sure how surprised the mayor was and how surprised the new superintendent was that they're going to have to deal with a task force set of recommendations of this magnitude, so to speak. And you know, they're going to kind of have to either implement many of them, or it sets up a fallback position of where it looks like, you know, they maybe didn't do enough. If we have another problem in the future and it comes down the side of something that might have been prevented by this task force recommendations, then you've kind of started the problem all over again. So if there was ever a chance for the mayor to want and the new superintendent to want to kind of completely start this over and do it in a way that, you know, might be better for everybody and have the cover of a task force that the mayor appointed, you know, making that recommendation, then this might be that time. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, and I do think Ron's call does go kind of that to that split that exists with the appointment of Eddie Johnson about one, you know, in the neighborhoods where he has worked, for the most part, the community activists and advocates in those neighborhoods were very supportive of his activity in working in those neighborhoods. But at the same time, he is of this institution that is tremendously under fire. And, you know, how can he affect change? And that seems to be the kind of the great coin flip question.
Yeah. Well, I you know, what you just set up, that dichotomy he has, I really doubt that was an accident. I mean, he kind of had to make a play for somebody with a foot in both of those worlds. If you think about it, if you had to make the pick, if you bring in somebody who's completely from the outside and the true reformer is going to come in, you know, knocking the tables over in there, you're going to have a police revolt. And if you, you know, do the other side, you're going to have problems the other way. So he kind of needed somebody who was acceptable to the community and also had a history with CPD. They feel like, you know, he's sort of one of their own as well. He kind of had to strike a little bit of balance. But you're also correct that now it's sort of crunch time. He's going to have to deal with the real problems. And I think it was even clear at the city council meeting the other day, you know, there basically is no honeymoon period here. He's got to come in the door and do the job and make some major fixes.
I want to switch gears on you real quick in the few minutes we have left with you to talk about the other major story that you worked on involving former U.S. House Speaker Dennis Hastert. And,
sure.
Which you could, if you read between the lines, you could tell that this took a tremendous amount of legwork and talking to these people who alleged victims of Hastert. And it still is stunning to me that that this is coming out so many decades later after his tenure as a wrestling coach at Yorkville High School.
Yeah, it's really, you know, obviously a tragic and sad but interesting case. And, yeah, you're correct. It took us quite a while to kind of wade through the large group of students that he would have had contact with back then to try to figure out if we could, you know, tell part of this story ahead of time. And it was me and really and Christy Gutowski, another reporter at the paper, and I know that you know well, who did a lot of the work to try to locate some of these men. And it's really has set up sort of a sad tale of a major politician in his career. Excuse me, Rick. Coming apart really at the end of his career, and it sets up a really interesting sentencing hearing, I think, on the 27th. I don't know how closely you've followed some of the issues that have circulated more recently, but I think we're going to have a real sentencing hearing when there's going to be a major argument over how much time he spends behind bars, if any. Well, and I can talk a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, well, certainly the issue of making a false statement to federal agents, which was not part of the prosecutorial effort here, but certainly seems like something that the judge definitely wants considered.
Yeah, the issue, I don't think it's not unexpected that Hastert's lawyers would come in and say, you know, he pleaded guilty to structuring. He's trying to avoid, you know, federal requirements on reporting of cash withdrawals, which he used, you know, for these past. But they said basically that's the crime here. That's what he pleaded guilty to. And they're trying as much as they can to keep the judge concentrated on that. You know, the guideline sentence for that is 0 to 6 months. So they've asked for probation because of his health and a variety of other reasons. Prosecution is trying to put forward, you know, the actual information on some of the alleged victims. They're going to bring in an actual victim who's going to testify about, you know, allegedly being abused by Hastert in the 70s. And I think that's why the judge concentrated on part of the story the other day in their last hearing. If you remember, individual A, who has stayed quiet and is not expected to testify, apparently when federal agents confronted him about Hastert payments, Hastert had told the feds basically that he was being falsely extorted. So the judge kind of seized on that and said, you're trying to get me to concentrate on alleged acts from decades ago, but this just happened a year ago. When he was finally confronted, Hastert basically tried to put a fake extortion rap on this guy. And he said he's going to take that into account in sentencing. So I think we're going to have some interesting you know, exchanges in that room that day where we're going to see what the future holds for Mr. Hastert, but it should be interesting.
That's Jeff Cohen, investigative reporter for the Chicago Tribune, my good friend and Tribune colleague. Jeff, thanks very much for getting up with me this morning.
Thanks, Rick. No problem. See ya.
We'll be back with more right after this.